Sweden and Finland are very advanced in terms of their support to caregivers.
Ms. Hunt says Britain, Australia, New Zealand, and Ireland do a better job than the United States in terms of their support to caregivers. She says that all four countries have strong government-supported caregiver programs. Families can get financial help and resources to help them care for elderly family members as well as disabled children.
In some cultures, it is the family's responsibility to care for aging family members. So even the word caregiver does not exist in many cultures.
Well, and in India, I think this is interesting. There are so many middle-class Indian people, young people who have moved to Australia or the UK or the US, and the parents are still living back in India, and they just send money back. There's, I think, an ongoing discussion in India of what's really the responsibility of the family, that they never even knew what the word caregiver was because it's just what you did.
Ms. Hunt says that is similar in China.
And the same thing actually is in China. China, you probably know, has passed a law saying that adult children must send money back to support the family. And they've started implementing this law now.
Ms. Hunt says that she found the situation in Japan to be far different. She says that Japan offers long-term insurance for families, and they also have a tradition of family caregiving. But she says they do not have a group of caregiving organizations that work together.
Japan has a lack of young people to care for its aging population. To answer that problem, Japan has sometimes turned to other countries to train people to work in healthcare. VOA Learning English did a report back in September 2013 on Japan and Germany training Vietnamese to work as healthcare workers for aging populations in those countries.
Scientists in Japan have also invented caregivers. Recently, scientists and engineers from Riken Brain Science Institute teamed up with a rubber maker to invent Robear. This robot is designed to move patients from a bed to a wheelchair.
No matter where in the world they live, Ms. Hunt advises caregivers to reach out for help if they feel they are suffering from burnout. She says it is important to reach out to extended family or to community organizations. She also says to take help, guilt-free, when people offer it.
The advice of the WHO health experts is simple. Take good care of your health. Health experts say people should treat health problems quickly. People should not smoke or drink too much alcohol. The WHO also advises people to get more exercise, eat healthy food, and get enough sleep.
These activities will help to keep you healthy and independent later in life. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Mario Ritter.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Hello, and welcome to Words and Their Stories, a weekly program from VOA Learning English. It can be said that the United States is a driving culture. The U.S., after all, is a big country, and many Americans love cars. So it is no surprise that many American English expressions come from the world of driving. One exciting example is life in the fast lane. This expression comes from the country's large system of highways. The roads are marked with painted lines to keep vehicles safely apart. These lines divide each road into separate lanes. Most highways in the U.S. are wide enough for three or four cars to travel side by side. Many areas require that slow drivers drive in the far right lane. Faster-moving traffic operates in the middle lanes. The fastest cars drive on the far left side, also called the fast lane. Someone living in the fast lane is like a fast-moving car. They live dangerously, at breakneck speed. It is a way of life marked by a fast pace, and usually the chase of immediate satisfaction. A person who lives in the fast lane is not happy to just live life quietly like other people. No, for someone living in the fast lane, life is one exciting experience after another. Every night is a party. Living life in the fast lane can be a selfish way to live. Sometimes these people only care about finding their next big thrill. Such people might drink a lot of alcohol or use other drugs. They do not think twice about how their lifestyle may affect them down the road or how it may affect others. So who lives in the fast lane? Living in the fast lane has a high price tag. You need lots of money for this kind of life. Some Hollywood movie actors are famous for their rich, fast-paced lives. Sports stars can have days filled with events, parties, and groupies, people who like famous people and follow them. But you do not have to be famous to live in the fast lane. Many politicians, lawyers, and business tycoons live in the fast lane. For them, life is full of movement, excitement, and action. However, most people, even actors and sports stars, need to be well-rested to perform well. If not, they could burn out quickly. But getting a full 8 hours is usually not part of a life in the fast lane. Many people who live in the fast lane are young. Sometimes the fast lane leads them down a rocky road or a very difficult phase. Others may hit a fork in the road. They must decide to stay in the fast lane or slow down to possibly have a longer and more meaningful life. And some never learn. Their life in the fast lane leads them to the end of the road, meaning they die. Rock musicians are known for living in the fast lane. We do not have time to name all of the performers who died young from their fast ways. Members of the rock band The Eagles lived in the fast lane. In fact, the group's founders, Glenn Frey and Don Henley, co-wrote a song about it. Life in the Fast Lane is one of their biggest hits. The two men were honest about this way of life, singing, "It will surely make you lose your mind." Glenn Frey died on January 18, 2016. As he aged, Frey did slow down. He became interested in health and physical fitness. But he died at the relatively young age of 67. I'm Ana Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In September of 1901, President William McKinley was assassinated. His vice president, Theodore Roosevelt, was sworn in to replace him. Roosevelt was 42 years old, the youngest man ever to hold the office of President of the United States. This week in our series, Morris Joyce and Shep O'Neill tell the story of President Theodore Roosevelt and his administration.
Theodore Roosevelt became president at the beginning of the 20th century. It was a time of rapid changes in American society. The changes were a result of technology. Great progress had been made, for example, in transportation. Almost every American city had a street railroad or trolley. These systems were powered by electricity. Thousands of Americans owned automobiles, and Henry Ford was planning a low-cost version which even more people could buy. Great progress had been made in communications. There were telephones in almost every business office in the cities and in many homes. And Italian inventor Guglielmo Marconi had sent the first wireless message across the Atlantic Ocean.
It was clear that the United States had made great progress in technology. Yet many believed it had made little progress in social issues. These people felt America's natural resources were being misused. They felt America's farmers were poorer than they should be. They felt America's industries were unfair to workers. Since the late 1800s, a spirit of reform had been growing in the United States. It started among farmers and led to the creation of a new political party, the Populists. Then organized labor joined the movement. Then middle-class Americans. Not everyone agreed on ways to solve society's problems, but they were united in the belief that social progress had to be made. The future of American democracy, they said, depended on the success of the progressive movement. The man who came to represent the spirit of reform most of all was the new president, Theodore Roosevelt.
Roosevelt was born to a wealthy family in New York City in 1858. He was a weak child with poor eyesight. He spent much of his time reading. When Theodore was 13 years old, he got into an argument with two other boys. He tried to fight them, but he was not strong enough. That incident was a turning point in Roosevelt's life. He decided to overcome his physical weaknesses through exercise and hard work. He lifted weights, ran long distances, and learned how to be a boxer. He continued these activities while he attended Harvard University. After college, Roosevelt married Alice Lee and returned to New York. He became active in the Republican Party. When he was just 23 years old, he was elected to the state legislature. Roosevelt quickly became known as a reform politician. He denounced all forms of dishonesty in government.
Roosevelt's first political career did not last long. He withdrew after 4 years, following the deaths of his wife and mother. His sadness was so great that he could not continue. Roosevelt moved to a ranch in the Dakota Territory of the American West. He began to raise beef cattle. At first, the local cowboys laughed at him. They called him Four Eyes because he wore eyeglasses. They stopped laughing when they found he could do the hard work of a cowboy as well as any of them.
Roosevelt spent 2 years in the West. Then he returned to New York and a life in politics. He became the Republican candidate for mayor of New York City, but lost the election. Then he campaigned for Republican Benjamin Harrison in the presidential election of 1888. Harrison won. And he named Roosevelt head of the Federal Civil Service Commission. Roosevelt fought hard to keep politics out of the civil service. Democrat Grover Cleveland was elected president 4 years later. He approved of Roosevelt's civil service reforms. He asked him to remain in the job. Roosevelt did so for another 2 years. Then he became commissioner of police in New York City. Once again, he pushed for reforms. He removed policemen found guilty of receiving illegal payments.
In 1897, President William McKinley named Theodore Roosevelt Assistant Secretary of the Navy. The United States went to war against Spain a year later. Roosevelt wanted an active part in the war, so he resigned and joined the army. He organized a force of horse soldiers known as the Rough Riders. They were honored for bravery in the Battle of San Juan Hill in Cuba. Roosevelt was now a war hero. Republican Party leaders in New York thought he would be the perfect candidate for governor. Teddy, as the public called him, won a close election. He soon made clear he would not take orders from party leaders. The new governor proposed controls on businesses. His main targets were companies that supplied the public with water, electricity, and natural gas. He demanded changes in the food and drug industries, and he shortened the workday for women and children.
The public praised Roosevelt's reform efforts. Local party leaders did not. As one said, "I do not want him raising hell in my state any longer." Local leaders decided the best way to get him out of New York politics was to support him for Vice President of the United States. The office gave a man very little voice or power in politics. Roosevelt did not want the job for that reason. By then, he wanted just one thing, to be President of the United States. He was sure being Vice President would ruin his chances. But he accepted the nomination at the National Convention. He would run on the ticket with William McKinley. "Sadly," he said, I do not expect to go any further in politics. Several months after he was sworn in as vice president, he was sworn in as president. William McKinley was dead. Theodore Roosevelt became president as the result of an assassin's bullet.
Roosevelt promised party leaders that he would continue McKinley's policies. He said he would move slowly in making any changes. In his first message to Congress, President Roosevelt offered a few new proposals. He asked for a Department of Commerce and Labor to deal with industrial problems. He called for a stronger Navy and for limits on immigration. And he proposed building a canal in Central America to link the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans.
Businessmen who feared the worst when Roosevelt became president began to breathe easier. It seemed he was not going to push for reforms after all. But Roosevelt was only following an old hunting rule of African tribesmen. Speak softly, the rule said, and carry a big stick. Roosevelt spoke softly during his first months as president. He would use the big stick later. When the blow came, it was against big business. A group of wealthy railroad owners had agreed to join their railroads into one. They formed a company to control it. The new company would have complete control of railroad transportation in the American West. There would be no competition.
President Roosevelt believed the company violated the Sherman antitrust law. The law said it was illegal for businesses to interfere with trade among the states. The law also said it was illegal for any person or group to get control of a whole industry. Since the antitrust law had been passed in 1890, few companies had been found guilty of violating it. So many people were shocked when Roosevelt announced he was taking action under the law against the railroad trust. He said there could be no compromise in how the law was enforced. That will be our story next week.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Morris Joyce and Shep O'Neill. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and images at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.